coming up on the Psychedelic Therapy Podcast.
The mainstay that we were trying to educate is the doctor who doesn't know what they don't know. Mm. And that is a doctor who does not even know that psychedelics are a thing. And so, yeah, there's tons of psychedelic societies. Are doctors who don't know psychedelics a thing in those societies? They are not. And the tagline we have on the website is, have your patient started asking you about psychedelics yet? Mm. Because that is going to hopefully wake them up to the fact that this is coming. And if they want to be whole physicians treating the patient with the best options possible, and because in the U.S., we have constant fear of litigation, if they want to keep themselves on the right side of malpractice, they're going to need to know about this entire new field. And so that's what our association, we're super excited when people who are already doing psychedelic therapies come in, because then they can add to the milieu and they can, there's a forum in there and then we can all discuss and we can learn from each other. They're going to be doing a lot of the teaching, but it's mainly aimed at the doctor who knows nothing. And at this point, I did not see any other association out there aimed at educating doctors from zero about psychedelics.
Welcome to the Psychedelic Therapy Podcast, a weekly conversation series with leaders in psychedelic culture, designed for therapists, healers, retreat leaders, and passionate enthusiasts. Presented by Maya and hosted by me, Eamon Armstrong. Welcome back to the Psychedelic Therapy Podcast. I'm your host, Eamon Armstrong. How will doctors who don't know about psychedelic therapies learn to be receptive to these innovative compounds as valuable tools for their patients? Dr. Lynn Marie Morsky, host of the Plant Medicine Podcast, has a brilliant idea to form an association dedicated to educating medical practitioners about psychedelics. On today's episode, Lynn Marie and I discuss why she created the Psychedelic Medicine Association. We talk about what it means to create a coalition of ethically aligned actors and how to advance equal access to entheogenic compounds. Lynn Marie shares her entrepreneurial challenges and her dreams about where this association could go in the next 5 to 10 years. As you'll learn on the show, Lynn Marie has quite an impressive background. She is a physician, an attorney, a podcaster, and the author of Quitting by Design. She works with the Veterans Administration and hosts the Plant Medicine Podcast. And now, here's Lynn Marie. Lynn Marie, welcome to the Psychedelic Therapy Podcast. It's such a treat to get to speak to you today.
I'm so excited for this. I was really thrilled to see that you were starting this podcast, and now it is a massive honor to be on it.
Oh, thank you. And I was actually on your podcast, the Plant Medicine Podcast, just as I was first beginning working with Maya and just about to launch this particular podcast. So we have a little history, you and I.
Yes, a little full circleness, because I am on the Maya Council of Guides, and like this all just kind of comes around, and I'm really excited about everything Maya is doing and all the things you're doing. And it's just an exciting time to be in this little world.
It is very exciting. And one of the things that's so exciting is the way that we are creating these relationships and doing our best to move forward this incredible healing modality with integrity. And part of how we do that is by creating more formal associations. So we have these different relationships and connections, and we're helping culturate people who are new to the field and businesses that are new to the field. And then different sorts of organizations and associations are coalescing. For example, the Oren Project, who does the North Star Pledge, just kind of all of us helping each other. And it's quite a fun, if at sometimes cantankerous, community.
I very much like that description. I recall the North Star Project kind of like launch event, which was the biggest Zoom call I think I've ever been on a Friday night. And yet it really felt like, this is obviously during quarantine, and it felt like a party. It felt like this big community gathering that we were all so needing. And it was just incredible. And that was just so inspiring for the rest of the movement. It's like, if we can get past our little cantankerous differences, we're going to have a great time moving this whole world forward.
Well, a little backstory on that. Some of the folks involved in North Star are actually, they're burners, they're creative types, they're performers, and were actually involved in something called Immersiverse, which I don't know if you heard about Immersiverse, but it was an attempt to create real human connection in a Zoom context. And that was happening around that time. So I think that there was some of the vibe of interactive play that actually was in the sort of North Star announcement and also their town halls afterwards. They seem to really know what they're doing in terms of gathering people in this time.
It was true. I have never been to such a well-organized and well-behaved situation like that. I mean, not in person, much less on Zoom. Like, you know, they had us in breakout groups and we all had our, you know, limited amount of time, and people respected that and the conversation stayed civil. And it was just like, wow, this is what's possible when things are run well and they're, you know, the intentions are set from the outset, like we're going to have a civil conversation. These are our boundaries. It was like bringing all the best of the Burning Man principles and consent and all of the things together. And it worked really well. So I was ever grateful for that model of how things could look.
Well, and I imagine that that model might have inspired some of what you're doing now with the Psychedelic Medicine Association. And a little later in the conversation, we may be circling back to that question of what you've learned and what you're trying to seed in bringing together this group of doctors and other stakeholders. So we'll get well into Psychedelic Medicine Association today. But first, I want to start with you, Lynn-Marie, because so you interviewed me on the show, and I didn't know that much about you. I just knew you had this amazing plant medicine podcast. And in preparing for this conversation, I've had the opportunity to do a little more of a dive on you and who you are. And it is pretty impressive, hilariously impressive, that you are a lawyer, a doctor, an author, a podcaster. I mean, are you just working all the time on all these different projects? I mean, just being a lawyer and a doctor, I feel like I couldn't be even one of those, much less two of them.
It does explain why I'm kind of, I always say this, I'm sure I should stop saying this sometime, maybe then it would stop being true, but I'm kind of existentially exhausted from how like arduous that 10 plus, well, I guess it was about 14 years that it took to, because I did medical. Actually, I was a multimedia designer to start. I was none of those things. Yeah, so I was halfway through graduate school in multimedia when I decided to quit. Then I had to do pre-med, medical school, residency, fellowship, and then I went to law school. So that took, you know, like a third of my life or something at this point. And now I would say I don't work nearly as hard as everybody else does. I just have to work very efficiently because it is time to start playing a little bit. I found that I think my nervous system is happier if I go salsa dancing and hang out on the beach for a while. And I'm back in San Diego, which is where I'm recently moved from. And I'm spending as much time here as I can just to like, you know, I am much more effective when I'm not work all day, Lynn-Marie, you know, it's a good balance that has to be struck to keep all these things going.
And I'm going to guess that there might have been something to do with some psychedelic medicine that maybe came into your life that helped you kind of shift from that type A, I have to succeed in this way, to like, oh, whoa, slow down. Let me enjoy life and give my beautiful gift as I can. Did you have that kind of experience? I'm kind of guessing you did.
Kind of guess. Yeah. Good guess, Eamon. I distinctly remember in my first ayahuasca ceremony when, you know, that old ego disillusion pops up. Even though at the time I was such a newbie to the world, I didn't know what ego disillusion was, but it showed itself to me as, you don't have to be a doctor. You don't have to be a lawyer. You don't have to achieve any more goals. You're lovable just for who you are. And like, that was a pretty revolutionary thought at the time that I'm not sure it had ever occurred to me. And so that is obviously stuck with me. It's like, if you, and almost every ceremony of any type I do, that little voice pops back up and says, if you do nothing else to achieve for the rest of your life, you're still lovable. So yes, it definitely helps me when I need to not achieve for a while.
Yeah, I found that invitation is so prevalent in psychedelic work. My big one of that theme was the first time I did 5-MeO-DMT, and I had a beautiful experience of being God observing me. So I got to like be the divine and like look at little Eamon in the world. And the beautiful release that I got was that your gift is yourself. So like, I don't need to someday write the amazing book or someday achieve this great thing. And then that's the gift, that actually my gift is just me. And then it totally liberated me to just do interesting things that I love. And then as I've gotten older and as my work has kind of expanded, I'm like, oh yeah,
That's actually, my gift is just sort of like me all the time. And sometimes it's a podcast and sometimes, you know, like working with Maya. But it's wonderful how psychedelic medicine helps us release these strange obsessions we have with getting to some other place. And I'm so grateful to them for that.
Yeah, I think that what it was for me and for a lot of us is that these obsessions are probably somewhat driven by it, maybe little t trauma. Or, for example, in my case, I realized that in my family, my dad was very often angry, but if you achieved, he was very happy. So it just seemed like it's a very easy, like there's doesn't take a really great psychotherapist to dig into the fact that like I just kept achieving because that would just keep him happier. You know, like even when I launched the Psychedelic Medicine Association the other day, I was like, oh, send email to Pop. He will be happy about this. You know, like that reflex is still there. It no longer is the driving reef. Like now I can see it for what it was, but I distinctly remember telling, like I was in a yogurt shop and the person's preparing my yogurt and he somehow like asked what I did and the whole like doctor lawyer thing came up and he was like, wow, what drives you to achieve all that? And I was like, yeah, probably childhood trauma. Like, I don't think he was like ready for that answer, but I think that's true. I mean, not that that's traumatic, but just essentially it was like, there's something in your childhood that drives you to do that. And psychedelics, I think, help us release those things. Like, hey, well, it actually showed me how to forgive my father for, you know, whatever his personality patterns were, because I could see how he was treated by his parents. And, you know, so once you can kind of let all of that go, you can also let go of your response to it.
Yeah. And another piece of around that same theme is the idea of letting go of addiction. And you have done some work in this space as well. So you are the author of a book, Quitting by Design, and a podcast, Quitting by Design, which have you quit the Quitting by Design podcast? Because I saw the last episode was April.
Yes, but it's not about addiction.
Oh, why did I think that?
And
why did I assume that Quitting by Design was addiction? This podcaster needs to do a little more achieving on his preparatory research. I was just looking and I was like, wait, an addiction too? So Quitting by Design is not addiction.
So cute. No. But I have to tell you that the funnier incidents about mistaking what Quitting by Design is when I interviewed James Fadiman. And after we, you know, we stopped the interview, we hit, you know, end on the recording. And he said, now, Lynn Marie, let's talk about you. I see that you're a quilter.
Quilting like, by design.
I have had more people, because if you like, nobody thinks of quitting as a thing, but quilting is obviously a thing. So like everybody's brain goes to that first, right? But if, yeah, the quitting by design is about strategically quitting anything that isn't working for you. So for example, I strategically quit the Quit Happens podcast at some point. I strategically quit patient care about a year and a half ago. I strategically quit cooking. Like there's like, it's all of a sudden I'm just like flipping back into the quitting mode. But yeah, there's so many little quits we can make in our lives that make huge differences. But you know, every self-help book is like, live your best life, but not that many address how to quit that life or the parts of it that weren't working for you. And so that's what I focused on. Especially I was speaking a lot to other like women physicians about quitting a lot of the mindsets that were keeping us in, you know, feeling like we had to perform at home and at work and on these millions of different ways and giving a lot of people the permission to quit medicine where I could. And so that's what that quitting was about.
I think it's maybe telling that my mind went straight to like quitting cigarettes, quitting drugs, quitting these quitting addictions. I tend to, you know, see the world a bit through that lens. So it's a bit telling about me.
And maybe James Fadiman is a secret quilter.
I see you. He's like eyes lighting up. Like, I see you also like quilting. Oh, man.
He was so bummed when I told him. Ah, no, just a quitter.
So as a quitter, you're also, a master transitioner. And you seem to be moving through spaces to find what really lights you up. And where we know each other from is your incredible, very successful podcast in the psychedelic space, which is the Plant Medicine Podcast. And so I'm guessing that you had to quit some things and make some space and bring that passion into your life. When did you launch the Plant Medicine Podcast?
August 13th, 2019.
Oh, so it's not actually that, it's only about a year old.
Yep.
It's really taken off. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. It is a testament to the people who are really interested and dedicated in this space, because some of the names that have come on, I know that it took every last bit of their scheduling to sneak it in. And the people who listen and have shared the podcast, like it's like you and I were discussing before we came on the air, is that you know, I have broken all of the rules for how to make something successful, minus the pick a niche. And the psychedelic science is definitely like, you know, the, in fact, I went for the nerdiest end of it. Like, we're not talking trip stories very often. It's mostly like, let's talk at the molecular level. What's happening with this LSD molecule? And yet people tune in. And so there is a great world out there of people who are excited about these substances and ready to like get them into their rightful place in society.
Mm. And I love your format too, where you do like a section on a molecule where you'll talk about like a practitioner. You talk about like a client or a, you know, patient or a journey or whomever. I got to do the Iboga one, talk about my Iboga experience. I loved the podcast that we did together. I'm like hesitating to be like, and so if you're listening, go check out that podcast. But
But for reals, go listen to that podcast.
Yeah, right. It's like, yeah, you know, the desire to promote. I should quit the desire to promote. But
I'll promote it for you. It's my show.
But I love the format, and I love how detailed you get into these different molecules, because I think right now the information around psychedelics and their value for healing is just flooding in. And I think it can be a bit overwhelming to be like, okay, wait, this molecule does what? And why is this molecule, like, do I need this? And, you know, I think for people who are uninitiated to psychedelics, to a community of psychedelic users who are suddenly hearing like, wait, I've had depression for like 10 years and there's, I can eat mushrooms and that'll help. You know, like, I think there's a lot of folks out there who need information in a way that's clear and digestible to them. And what I see is going on so much in the landscape right now is a lot of the information is kind of sensational business information, where it's like this new molecule will be patented and this company is going to do an IPO. And, you know, do you know many good resources beyond your podcast for people who are uninitiated to psychedelics to understand that it could be of value to their mental health and to begin to explore that?
Well, there are a lot of resources, but I think the digestible part is where we're set aside a little bit. And also, so I founded plantmedicine.org along with the podcast. And so it kind of mirrors that, like, every podcast is tagged one of the medicines. And then if, when you go to that medicine section, here's a little write-up on the medicine. Here's a little blog post on the medicine. Here's all the podcast episodes that have been done about it. Because, for example, if you go to MAPS website, MAPS is 34 years old. There are a million blog posts, right? Like, you have to do like a search and find, you know. And we've only had 60 something episodes. And as you said, the reason that I did the format that you're talking about is because I didn't want somebody to start at number one and just start listening. I wanted that person out there who said, I have depression. I've heard maybe ayahuasca or maybe psilocybin or maybe this other molecule could be good, or ketamine especially. Let me go straight to the ketamine episodes. And I'm wondering, like, what's the science behind it? That means I'm going to go straight to the ketamine science episode. Or if they're like, gosh, what am I going to be feeling or thinking? Then they go to the ketamine patient episode. And now that we've finished all of the series of medicine episodes that had a patient experience, scientific research experience, practitioner experience, and then history and legality. Now that we've gone through all of the medicines with that, I've moved to specific condition episodes, so that now if somebody just says, I have depression, they can look at all the episodes that have depression. Like, last week we had depression and ketamine, and we had psychedelics and traumatic brain injury. So, like, they can look by the condition that they're trying to address with psychedelics, or they might look by psychedelics still and be like, oh, these are the things I can address with it. But that's what I think sets it apart, is it's not like, here's famous psychedelic person talking about lots of things, you know, because then only 2 seconds of that podcast may actually apply to the thing you're concerned about. It may be really interesting and fascinating for psychonauts, but if you're just like, I need answers, will this, you know, like, will this substance address this condition? That's exactly who we're aimed for. We're definitely the psychedelics 101 level.
Mm. I love that you're holding that space and that you're making it so accessible to people, because that's exactly the case for many of the people that these medicines could help the most. I mean, for those of us who've been in the psychedelic space for a while, we know how to find a ceremony that we can sit in. We have a sense of how to approach the work. And I think that a lot of people, they don't just need a molecule to make depression go away. What they're really looking for is an experience that's going to reframe the paradigm of their existence. And they may not even know that. They may just be nursing a malady that they're like, what on earth is going to take this away? And then when they finally end up with the medicine, they're like, not only is this seeming like it might take this away, but I actually want to be a chef now. How about that? You know,
And then they get the book on quitting.
Right?
It's just a funnel into my quitting book. But so many people come out of psychedelic experiences with just like, oh, that corporate life or whatever marriage or whatever situation they're in, they realize, wow, I might have been in it for some wrong reason. And it's definitely not serving my higher self. So many transformations happen after that, for sure.
Absolutely. Transformation after transformation. And just as long as you can integrate it, you're good.
Yes.
So, okay. So you have the Plant Medicine Podcast and you have the website. And so what was it, aside from a desire to achieve, that made you decide that you also wanted to create a plant medicine association? What's the instinct to say, let's take this a step further and provide yet another resource for the psychedelic community and beyond?
Yeah. First of all, I love your call out. You're just so fantastic. You're the best host.
Second best host, Lynn Marie.
You're so sweet. Aside from that need to achieve. Actually, comically, it wasn't that I needed to achieve. It was that I had an achievement that I wanted, and not necessarily for my ego, but for kind of society, which was to educate doctors and practitioners. And I was working at the VA until almost just over a year ago. And I knew that none of my colleagues knew about psychedelic medicine or the potentials at all. And I kept thinking like, well, how are these going to get to patients if they don't? And so that's actually why the Plant Medicine Podcast was founded. My genius idea was because at the time I had a podcast on quitting and that was the format that I knew. And also I knew I wasn't an expert in these. And I thought, how do I become an expert? Well, I'll need to interview experts. Oh, I'll just put that on a podcast. Great. Except for that's not how doctors get their information about medicine. No doctor is like, I need to know how to treat heart failure. I'm going to sit down for 45 minutes and listen to this podcast, right? Like, that's not it. And an article done about me on quitting had come out via this website called Medscape that every doctor apparently in the US seems to subscribe to. All of a sudden, all my colleagues are flooding with like, you ended up in my inbox. And I was like, oh, this is how doctors get information. Totally missed the mark.
That's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah. People are thinking like, why doesn't Lynn Marie, a doctor, know how doctors get information? I have not been practicing traditional clinical medicine for a very long time. At the VA, I was doing this like kind of interview that people would get as they left the service. I was never treating anything. Like, I haven't treated a patient in over 10 years. So I didn't have to keep clinical on most of these things in the same way that somebody working 50 hours a week in a clinic does. And so I didn't have those same avenues. I wasn't signing up for Medscape. And so when I realized that, oh, nice try, Morsky, but you need to actually get into their inbox to get the information to them, I thought, how do I get into their inbox? And that was, and around that same time, a dear friend of mine, Valerie, she was just like, you need to make an association. And at first it didn't kind of click. And then later when I firmly put that, how do you get the email in? I was like, oh, if I wanted to learn more about a thing, I would join like Society of Physician Entrepreneurs was something I had joined at some point because I'm not an entrepreneur and I wanted to learn more. And I was like, oh, that's the association is how you get into their inbox. And so that essentially wasn't like I wanted another achievement. I just wanted to like do properly the achievement I'd set out for in the first place.
Well, you know, there seem to be a lot of like psychedelic societies and different kinds of integration circles. And so there does seem to be these different sort of coalitions and organizations. We spoke of the North Star Project earlier. Are there any organizations that you know that are in a similar space that you kind of modeled after? Or was this just a total open space that's like, okay, well, there are societies, there's a lot of things catering to psychonauts, but there's not really something that is really about doctors?
Right. There is and it's not only that I haven't heard of it, but, you know, we had our global press release Thursday and somebody have written to me and said, there's nobody else doing this because our goal is not to talk to, unfortunately, the dear people who are listening to this podcast, we want you as well. But the mainstay that we're trying to educate is the doctor who doesn't know what they don't know. And that is a doctor who does not even know that psychedelics are a thing. And so, yeah, there's tons of psychedelic societies. Are doctors who don't know psychedelics a thing in those societies? They are not. And so we are having to do kind of like the advertising surmounting of the fact that they're going to have to be made aware that this is even happening. Because like I said, if it's not ending up in their inbox, there's no guarantee they've seen the thing on 60 Minutes or they happen to have, you know, rumbled through Forbes or Fortune and seen Capstone announcements. Like there is a large, like I said, I'm going to these physician conferences speaking on the quitting subject and I'm polling my friends and nobody knows that this is a thing. And so our association is meant to draw those doctors in who, you know, at least at the beginning, ones that have at least heard of it that we can get to, but then we're going to have to do a lot of outreach. You know, I'm going to have to, you know, go in my physician groups and say like, guys, this is happening. And the tagline we have on the website is, have your patient started asking you about psychedelics yet? Mm. Because that is going to hopefully wake them up to the fact that this is coming. And if they want to be whole physicians treating the patient with the best options possible, and because in the US, we have constant fear of litigation, if they want to keep themselves on the right side of malpractice, they're going to need to know about this entire new field. And so that's what our association, we're super excited when people who are already doing psychedelic therapies come in, because then they can add to the milieu and they can, there's a forum in there and then we can all discuss and we can learn from each other. They're going to be doing a lot of the teaching, but it's mainly aimed at the doctor who knows nothing. And at this point, I did not see any other association out there aimed at educating doctors from zero about psychedelics.
So you've already answered a big part of my next question, but I think it might be helpful for the listener in kind of a focused way to say, what is the Psychedelic Medicine Association? Will there be a conference? Is it a newsletter? Is it just a collection of people? Would there be members to it? Is there a member dues to it? Like, what is this model that you are putting out in the world?
Yes. So there are memberships. There are membership dues. The membership dues, please hear me now. If you cannot pay the membership dues, you tell us, you still get in. We will comp the membership dues. Like, we're not letting finances be an issue here. We want this information to get out. We are charging dues. Every association charges dues because we have to keep the lights on, et cetera. So we have three types of membership. One is for practitioners, and that is anybody who is in something that faces patients. Are you a doctor, nurse practitioner, PA, pharmacist?
That's our audience.
Therapist.
That's the audience. Those are our good listeners right now who are just like, oh, I'm that person.
That's me.
There's other people listening too. I don't mean to discount you, but yeah, we are very, very much that first group.
Yes, yes. And that's why I was so excited that I was able to come on and have this chat, because you are the target audience. In fact, I had posted something about Psychedelic Medicine Association, I think maybe in the Maya Facebook group, and somebody was already, signed up for it. So that's who we're aiming with for that membership. And then there are two other types of memberships. One is an organizational membership. And so organizations like Maya come in because we want doctors to be like, to realize, say you're a doctor and you don't know this is a thing. And you first hear about it and we've got this years of stigma to overcome. And your first thought is, this is fringe, right? And then you get into this organization and you're in a forum and you see, oh, there's Unlimited Sciences and they're doing a study with Johns Hopkins. Oh, there's the, I just was contacted by the Beckley Foundation. Like, if you've got organizations that are doing these kind of work, I think doctors are it's going to take a lot less to get them over the stigma. And so we also want those organizations to come in there and fill in the other parts of the puzzle, because educating physicians is one step, but you can be educated all you want. If your patients can't pay for it, or if they tell you they're doing a psychedelic and then suddenly they lose their benefits, like, these are all things that need to be addressed so that we can get psychedelics from FDA approval, which is step one. I mean, many years to get to step one. And then step two is, how do we get these covered by insurance? How do we get doctors to feel comfortable prescribing them? How do we make sure that there are no drawbacks to people being open about their psychedelic use? So that's why we're having other organizations come in. I was talking with somebody from OCHI, the Oakland Initiative, and they're like, we'd love to come in and talk about, community healing opportunities. And like, doctors should definitely know the community healing opportunities are out there. And so then the third type of organization is that we're going to have corporations in there. And this is, full disclosure, where I got very nervous, because, we're in this milieu of kind of anti-corporation sentiment. And some of our advisors said, like, these businesses are going to do what they're going to do, whether or not you interact with them. But if you interact with them and you put guidelines up, like, we have the North Star guidelines are part of our ethics guidelines. And you say you can only be part of our group and speak with our doctors if you abide by these guidelines, then you can have some reverse influence on those corporations, because they're going to do these things anyway. And so, I see you want to ask a question. I will put a pin in this. Go for it.
I don't want to interrupt you, but or maybe I could even flag it for later, but it'd be nice to kind of go into that ethics piece. I don't know if you know this, but I've been working on the ethics piece for Maya, and I agree with you that it's all about building a coalition that then attracts all of the businesses, where it's like, the value of being part of an ethically aligned coalition is more valuable than the business practices that are unethical, because it's capitalism. People are just going to, cut corners. But if the value of being part of the coalition is actually greater, then we can have ethically aligned actors in the space, which of course we all want. So I do want to like either flag for later, or if you want to talk about it now, and we can kind of circle back. But what you've been doing with ethics with the Psychedelic Medicine Association, and whether it sounds like there's some kind of binding agreement for members around the ethical commitments. Is that the case?
Well, we haven't launched yet, so we haven't put out that agreement officially. But yes, that will be part of. Well, it will be on our page, and at some point. There's going to be, you know, we have our founding members, but people who come in after that are going to have to go through like the membership committee and make sure that they are ethical enough actors to come in. Because to discuss what I was about to say with the, you know, say like pharmaceutical groups, they're making a pharmaceutical, you know, MindMed or one of these groups that's making a pharmaceutical out of psychedelics. Well, in the traditional medical model, I, as a physician, have never gotten to ask Pfizer about Viagra, right? There's no direct communication. There's a drug rep, maybe, that who is not a doctor nor a scientist generally, and that's the only communication we have is through them. There's no direct communication. And since this is such a budding field and we need to get over this stigma, we wanted to foster a forum where the doctors could talk to some representative from those directly and have that kind of communication so that those people making the medicine know how they're being used clinically. And if doctors have seen a lot of side effects, we don't have to wait until, you know, months of reports come in. It can come in instantly. And if the doctors have questions about what the studies were showing and how they can be used, they can ask directly. Same thing with people running ketamine clinics and other things that doctors may be leery about recommending. If you can have a direct conversation with the people running your ketamine clinic and say, what kind of safeguards do you have? What kind of integration do you have? What's the preparation? What kind of screening are you using? Then the doctor's going to feel a lot more comfortable. And so that's why we've decided to let, you know, among many other reasons, to have corporations in there, because we might as well just all work on this together and have everybody in one place where we can, you know, there's a little monitoring of what's going on. And when we see, okay, we're taking this direction, then maybe if we need, like, for example, lobbying, we've got a group of doctors. If we want to go lobby and try to get insurances to cover psychedelics. And if we want to run a research study, we've got a group of doctors here that can help you run the research study and those kinds of things. Like, so this, that whole second side outside of the practitioners with the organizations and the corporations is there so that we can cover all angles of trying to move this forward as a medicine.
Mm, I love that. And I think it's really wise to consider the full picture. You know, insurance is going to be a huge part of this. And, you know, what one of the biggest challenges in mental health nationally is that people's insurance doesn't really cover the talk therapy that they need over time. And even when it does, it's like a small collection of doctors to choose from, and none of them have availability. I think many people who've worked in that space or have tried to seek help in that space have been really frustrated by insurance and the ability to actually get the treatments and support they need. So I could absolutely see why having this broad coalition is going to be really impactful. Do you feel that having such a broad collection of actors, it might be difficult to kind of focus what the association is trying to accomplish? I guess the question might even be like, what exactly is the association trying to accomplish? And how might you get so many disparate actors to then sort of conform to a similar position on some of these matters?
Our mission is education of practitioners. At the end of the day, if nothing else happens, I've still accomplished, because my initial vision was much smaller. It was just like, get all the doctors together. And then, you know, as more people came in and advisors came in and said, this is a bigger picture than just doctors. We need all the practitioners. Absolutely. Okay. And then we also need these other actors. But my personal mission is so that when you go to your doctor knows about psychedelics. Doesn't matter if you're going to your primary care doctor, your psychiatrist, or if you go to your counselor and talk therapy could use an adjunct, they're able to say, here's what's available in the world of psychedelic therapies. The rest of what goes on is very much guided by the people in the association. And we're there to help them with, you know, say, for example, you know, the Oakland Community Healing Initiative, if that goes through and they want to educate doctors on what it looks like, they can, as a member, they can host a webinar. Hey, docs, if you want to come learn. So that's still education, right? The parts that we're responsible for are all about education. But the benefit to them is not only can they educate, but then they can have that also the way they can utilize members of the group. It's like, we need some doctors in Oakland to come with us to the city council meeting and talk. Then they've got that, you know, the ability to right there. By the way, Ochi has not signed on, just to clarify that. But that's just an example of, you know, like who could benefit from this. You know, Unlimited Science, who is a founding member, if they want to come in and talk about, okay, hey, docs, can you tell us what you've been seeing in your patients using psilocybin? Like, that's not education, but that's their own interest. And we're there for that. But our mission, you know, at the heart, at the end of it, you know, we're letting everybody else kind of like utilize the resources because everybody's going to benefit. But our mission is just to make sure that this step one is education. But we really do want to foster a home where those other steps can happen, because if your doctor says, okay, yay, psychedelics, try this ketamine infusion, it's $6,000, and nobody but the elite can do that, then we're nearly back at ground zero. And so we are happy to be a home where those other conversations can happen, because we know that education is literally just like step one of the step two.
And I'll have to just jump into that moment of nearly back to zero. I don't think it's back to zero. I think actually when psychedelics are prohibitively expensive, except for the elite, and they represent spiritual, emotional, and potentially even physical performance enhancement, that doesn't just take us back to zero. That actually expands inequality, right? Like if only the elite have access to these groundbreaking, incredibly potent medicines, we're actually making the world less equal. And so that's one of the things that we've talked a lot about at Maya, is like how we can support equal access. It's something that I care about. So since you brought it up, I figured I'd flag it.
Yes, I appreciate that very much.
And I feel like I'm not totally sure about this thing about ethics. So I want to ask the question again, which is, and I think maybe a better way to ask it, because it sounds like some of these documents and some of these ideas are still in development. So rather than asking you what are the ethical conditions of membership to the Psychedelic Medicine Association, instead, I think a better question to ask would be, what are some of the themes and topics around ethics that you're considering as you're putting together these documents and these aspects to the association? Because there's a lot of things at play right now in terms of psychedelic ethics. There's a lot of talk about it. And I think that an association like this that a lot of people want to be involved in, having some degree of an ethical commitment in order to participate, that's enormously valuable, right? So I'm just kind of curious, like, what are the aspects of ethics in the context of psychedelics that are most salient for you right now?
Transparency. That's a big one. We're going to be transparent about how we are run and where your money is going, how your dues are going. And we want other organizations that are transparent as well. We are going, you know, these are North Star things that you know about, but we want to continuously stay in our lane and foster other, because like part of the North Star is like, is somebody else already doing this kind of thing? So we're going to keep our promises, stay where in on our mission and help others that are doing theirs instead of, you know, overstepping. And that's another thing we'd like from our organizations. We are committed to diverse perspectives. And that's something that from the beginning, you know, we have somebody, one of our board of advisors, Kwasi Adusi, he has come on and he said he will help us with
Kwasi's
community
great.
Of colors. Yes, he's on our board. He was really excited because, you know, we are stoked to have somebody whose passion is community of color outreach. And he is just like, he's one of the few doctor nurse practitioners that I know, and he's working in psychiatry and he's just got such a great breadth of knowledge. But he's also, in addition to that, going to help us with that outreach so that we can make sure that even from the get-go, things like inclusion and diversity are not afterthoughts. So forgive me that I don't have, like, I'm sure you spend a lot more time diving into the ethics
way too much of my time is thinking about psychedelic ethics.
Yeah. Those are just the start. You know, we can come back and have episode two, all about our ethics.
And I want to give a shout out to Kwasi real quick, because I asked him to be on the podcast and he was like, listen, I totally love to be on the podcast, but check this out. I'm working with other people who like went through the MAPS BIPOC training, other people who are building these new, like people who are starting out in their careers, really cool people who I think would really actually benefit more than me from being on it. And he connected me with Flori St. Amy, who was just on the podcast a couple episodes ago. It was her first podcast and she killed it. She was amazing. And I just love the way that he was like, it's perfect community like support and building, where he's like, I could do it, I'd love to do it, but let me like pass the mic to this person who's developing their leadership right now and give them the opportunity to do it. So I just want to give him a big shout out for doing that, because I think that's what a wonderful example about how we actually platform diverse voices. Platforming diverse voices isn't just about identity. It's about giving people a shot and like finding the magic that you might not have otherwise found.
I totally agree. And I just love that when people in the psychedelics industry, because I think you and I were discussing this before we started recording, but a lot of what psychedelics purport to do is help us dissolve that ego. And that's such a great example of somebody who's acting not from ego. Like the ego says, I'm on another podcast. not from ego is like, what's this other person to? And like, that's just a beautiful example to the rest of us.
Yeah, I love it. I appreciate that. I'm glad I got to bring it up on the podcast because it's, I like that that he did that.
It's awesome.
Okay. So I'm not sure like where you're at exactly in the planning of this, because we've talked a little bit about it and it seems like it was like an idea whose time had come. And so it seems to have kind of exploded for you. And being the achiever that you are, you know, the website already looks gorgeous. The logo is like, it's already, you know, it already feels very dialed. I wonder if you were to look forward, I mean, psychedelics are moving so fast. Everything is happening. It's just a gasoline on this potential medicine. But if you were to look forward to like 5-10 years, like what would your vision for the Psychedelic Medicine Association look like when these compounds are really properly seeded into society? Because you've said basically that your starting place is educating doctors. And at some point, they're going to be educated. It's going to be mainstream. So I wonder how you imagine the Psychedelic Medicine Association evolving over the next, you know, 5-10 years.
Well, they're going to be aware of it because it's mainstream. But let me tell you, for a doctor to discuss something with a patient is not like, hey, I heard about it in Fortune. Is they want to know deeply. Like I had an episode with Dr. Ben Malcolm, the pharmacist, about which antidepressants interact with which psychedelics. Like until that's common knowledge coming out of medical school, patients, doctors are not going to know enough to feel comfortable. Like until, okay, how do you cardiac screen somebody for an Ibogaine ceremony? You know, because Ibogaine, you've got to have a certain type of cardiac arrhythmia that's contraindicated. Like, that's the level that we need doctors to get to before they're going to feel comfortable having these conversations. So just like waiting, okay, they're FDA approved. Let me tell you, there are plenty of FDA approved medicines I've never heard of. And, you know, I've been a doctor almost, 15 years. So it's going to take continuous education until this gets into the medical school curriculum. And you know how long that's going to take to change a curriculum, right? However, we kind of got sidetracked before and I didn't tell you what benefits those people get.
Oh,
that
yeah.
Join. Like the,
let's do that.
Right,
that's a good
right?
idea. Bring
small,
us back. I'm glad you're a podcaster. Right. You track when we lose the loop too. Yeah, let's bring us back.
Yes. Because this is important because, okay, if you join as a practitioner member, then every month we're going to send you an update on what's the latest in psychedelic science. So you're always up to date so that you're not having to do what I do every morning is like scramble through like, okay, what's the latest finding? You know, like we're just going to sum it all up for you, easy to digest. But we're also going to give some guidelines. Like here's a cheat sheet of all the psychedelics, just a little bit about them. So that if somebody comes in and says, I'm going to do 5-MeO-DMT, and you've maybe heard of MDMA and psilocybin, but you're like, what is that one? Like, it's just a little cheat sheet to tell you what they are. And then another thing with like, we're going to send some other important Cliff Notes types things like I just mentioned. Okay, what contraindications are there to using these psychedelics? Are you on this type of antidepressant that you shouldn't be taking with ayahuasca? Like these basic things so that they can start feeling comfortable having these conversations. Like, okay, I've got these two pieces of paper, these two PDFs that I can pull out anytime somebody mentions a psychedelic. That's a start. We're also going to have, we have law firms in there that are going to help us teach the doctors how to legally talk about something that's an illegal substance and how to stay on the right side of conversations when you don't know all that you need to know yet, but don't want to just cross your arms and say, I don't know everything, so drugs are bad. We're not talking about this. Like that's a complete disservice to patients. So we want them to get comfortable along the way. So we've got options for webinars and that kind of thing. So they're going to get the information every month on the science. They'll get some introductory guides talking about these medicines and how to talk about them and some basics of how they interact medically. But then that's where we really rely on the member organizations to step forward and say, hey, now let's have somebody put on the, let's talk legally about psychedelics, or let's talk about options in the community. We're going to have those kinds of opportunities for webinars. So 5 years down the road, we're probably having webinars maybe once a month or so. We may make some continuing education courses. We've at this point offered everybody else who's making continuing education courses to just post them free on our website. You don't even have to be a member to see those. But I do foresee conferences because, you know, so many of the connections I've made at the Psychedelic Science Summit or Horizons. And as somebody from Field Trip actually pointed out, the medical director from Field Trip, he said, you know, he's a family doc and he said, I believe he's family. And he said, strength in numbers. Doctors are going to feel really insecure having this conversation until they go to a place with 300 other doctors who are also having this conversation. And that's why we love having people like your listeners in there, because it's people already doing the work. And it's people with licenses already doing the work. It's not just, oh, you know, somebody who's done enough psilocybin to do a little journey. No, this is, you know, you've got licensed therapists doing the work. That's really going to help. So I think the more we can get doctors to see each other, doctors and practitioners and all that, either virtually in our forum or in person, then the faster we can get this implemented. Mm,
I love that. So you have been able to accomplish many things in your life. I still can't get over that you are both a doctor and a lawyer and then all these other things you do. But I'm guessing that something like a psychedelic medicine association is not lifted up by one person. You've alluded to the fact that you have founding members, and we're proud at Maya to be part of that. I'm curious, who's been involved in getting this together? Who's advising you? Who else is in the mix helping you stand up this cool project you're so passionate about?
Sure. So I was just on LinkedIn, living on LinkedIn, and somebody found me from the Conscious Fund. They are backing a lot of they work with Rick Doblin on a number of issues, and they have founded Microdose and a number of other things that are in this space. And they had come to me saying, we see the need for psychedelic continuing medical education, which is called CME in the medical world, and which is called CE, I think, in the therapy world. And so they came to me to help them make that. And I happened to mention that I was in the process of trying to found an association. All I had done was buy the URL. And they said, well, we think that's totally necessary. We will be your business advisors. And we know a CTO, Barney. They said, you can have Barney and we'll all make this thing a reality. And it was funny because when they started mentioning the things that they could help with, it occurred to me how little I knew about what it was actually going to take to start this association. You know, I'm not an entrepreneur by nature.
You started podcasts, you've written books.
I start a lot of things.
That's all right. Entrepreneurship. So don't sell yourself short.
I get it. But I also never know what I'm doing. It's just like, here's a podcast, right? Like my podcast isn't an S corp. I just throw everything under my name, and most things have not generated significant income. But I didn't really know how to set up a business. I didn't know how to set up a bank to take dues and what kind of things. And like they said, look, you know, we're not providing any funds, but we'll advise you on how to set things up, and we'll give you some contacts in the industry because you know they're in London and Malta, and so they have contacts in an area of the world I have essentially no contacts in. And so that was really helpful because this is not a national organization. This is an international organization, which I'm very proud of because Canada is doing so much of the work that we can learn from. And so I'm very glad that like the Canadian Psychedelic Association is also a founding member. So we get to have their expertise come in. But so it's two gentlemen from the Conscious Fund are our business advisors. And then Barney is my CTO and me. It's the team of the four of us.
Nice. It's great that you're getting that support from an organization that is supporting a lot of others, because much like the association itself, it's, you know, the ability to make these connections and kind of help out over here. And then, oh, well, the association can be supportive here. Do you see any big challenges obviously there are challenges in terms of starting an association like this, but are there any kind of blockers or things that you're like, oh, I'm not quite sure how to deal with this aspect of it? Like anything that you are needing support on, help on, like where are the challenges here?
I'd say, since it hasn't launched, mine are like perceived fears of the future. And some of it is like when you have an organization and you let different members in that have different missions and they're all speaking in the same forum. So there are two forums. One is just for practitioners to speak with each other because we have a language all our own and we don't need to be judged for how we express things and we abbreviate things and it may look confusing or dramatic to those outside, and we know what we're trying to say and we know our hearts. So we get to have just a vulnerable, open discussion amongst ourselves in that forum. And then in the other forum is where the organizations and the corporations get to speak with the practitioners. And I guess that's my thing is like we don't want to say, oh, we have somebody on this side of the argument, so we can't have this other one. No, everybody who follows these ethic guidelines can come in, but maintaining that civility, like I said, with that North Star town hall that we went to, it was so civil and there was so much progress made that my hope, I guess not necessarily, you know, that I perceive it as a challenge, but just like you said, there's some cantankerous folks. And so far, everybody that we've worked with has been not cantankerous. And I think they see the bigger vision, but there are a lot of strong personalities in this field. And so I think it's just kind of the thought of like managing those personalities if they start to get a little inflammatory. That's a challenge that I see. And then the other challenge is just getting doctors and other practitioners to understand that they need to learn this. Like the more that it's in the lay public, like you said, in 5 years, I think they're going to know that they need to. But at this point, you know, if they're not paying close attention, it's easy for them to have missed that this is even an option. And so it's kind of that first hurdle. Like, it's, I'm in a lot of physician groups, and there's one physician group that I'm in with 50,000 doctors. And it's a group about side gigs. A lot, you know, many, many doctors are really burnt out and they're looking for side gigs. And so somebody, and this happens not infrequently, will ask, should I become a medical marijuana, medical cannabis physician? And the responses to that are often so inflammatory and hateful. This is from physicians. And same thing when I was actually in that Medscape article about quitting, there were 100 comments at the bottom. Many of them very angry that I had wasted a spot in medical school, that I was essentially a waste of a person for having left medicine. Ooh. Like, and these were from generally psychiatrists. And so I was like, whoa, okay. Are you just trying to create more patients for yourselves with this kind of trauma? But like, these are the attitudes that, you know, like medicine is kind of a conservative field. And I'm waiting for the minute that I put this in that group or a group like it and just get like arrows flung at me. And it's going to be very interesting. You know, I'm willing to take those arrows. I think that's part of, you know, like when I asked the little fungal friends, like, why do I have this weird career path? I was like a doctor and a lawyer, but I don't really want to do any of those things. It was like, because it had to be you, because they're going to fling arrows at a conservative family. My total Republican family in the Midwest didn't try a psychedelic till I was 35. Doctor, lawyer, is that who they're going to fling the arrows at? Great. You put that shield up because you've got that. You've got all that education. You've got the background. You weren't doing raving and doing ecstasy. You did nothing until this came along, essentially, a few years ago for you in a therapeutic way. So those are the battles I'm willing to like stand up in front of. But those are kind of the things that I, if anything, the challenges I see coming. Mm.
I'll just say that I was doing raving.
I was doing raving. Is that the 43-year-oldest thing I've ever said?
Yes.
I was doing raving. Did I say that?
But you know, just to be clear, my background is not as a doctor or a lawyer. I know.
I definitely did the raves.
Yeah, I definitely did the rave thing.
So the launch date here is the 29th of September, and you're launching with a free virtual event on that day to celebrate it. We'll have the link to that in the show notes. But how else can people connect with you, can connect with the association? Where should we send people? I know we've talked about your podcast, the Plant Medicine Podcast, talked a lot about you, but let's do that piece of the podcast where we send our eager and enthusiastic listeners your way.
Yes, please head over to psychedelicmedicineassociation.org. You can sign up for the virtual event there, and you can also sign up for your own information to get your own membership when we launch. If you happen to be part of an organization, like we have a lot of great organizations, like we have Fluence as a founding member. They're doing a lot of psychedelic education. So if you happen to have an organization like that, there's a place at the bottom to give us your email as well. But right now, all the signups and everything, you know, communication-wise, is going through psychedelicmedicineassociation.org. That's our main presence.
Beautiful. And how I like to end all of our podcasts here at the Psychedelic Therapy Podcast is just to honor those listening who are working in the space of psychedelic healing in whatever capacity and give you the opportunity to speak directly to the psychedelic healers and practitioners. And you're welcome to talk about the Psychedelic Medicine Association. You're welcome to just talk about your experience, some advice, your gratitude, whatever you'd like to say to those pioneers who are leading the way with this healing. I'd like to give the floor to you for that final moment.
I appreciate that. Yes, it's pure gratitude that I would like to express to the people who took it upon themselves to get into something cutting edge that you know is going to change patients' lives for the better and setting an example for what's to come, because the medicine practitioners that are getting into this space are going to look to you to say, wow, here are people who've gone through extra training on top of the immense amount of training it already takes to become a counselor or a therapist or somebody in this field. And then you did extra training to become a psychedelic psychotherapist and fully understand what is a very complicated area of medicine. Like, this is way more complicated than how to use Lipitor. Like, this is an entire explosive field that you've undertaken. And I don't appreciate just your being willing to do that in the field, but also what it takes for you as a person because I, you know, I've practiced medicine for 15 years and I cannot imagine, I'm being very frank here, cannot imagine being in your shoes for a minute, because that is so much responsibility that you take on when somebody, maybe their ego dissolves, or they, you know, they're on another plane and you're the one in the room that's keeping them grounded or letting them go as far out as they need to, but you're medically responsible. Like, that's so much responsibility that I just, I'm sending out a giant debt of gratitude for everybody who has given so much of themselves to do what's so necessary for other people to heal.
I love that. And I shall second it, because I also feel that way. I've had an opportunity to interview already a number of different practitioners on the show. I have a lot of psychedelic healers and practitioners in my personal life. And there's a specific thing you need to do to be able to be a healer in that particular space. It's not simply about understanding medicine. It's not simply about having a vibe. You know, there's a certain way that space is held in a psychedelic container, and it really takes a special person to do that. And so that is why we have this podcast for you. And for the enthusiasts, and for the enthusiasts, and for Lynn-Marie's friends who are listening right now, and all of our colleagues. I'm so happy you're doing this. I was really excited when it came across my desk, and I don't have a desk. I work from home. I mean,
that was my first thought.
Yeah, I was like, there's no, it was so old timey. It came across my desk, and someone faxed it over. I'm trying to think of what's old timey in 2020. Everything is old timey.
Right, exactly.
Lynn-Marie, I so appreciate that this is happening. I'm really glad that you're doing it. I'm really glad that Maya is a founding member. And I've looked over the list of the other founding members. I mean, folks who've been on the show, Heroic Hearts Project, you know, a number of great. I should have a whole list of them and just read it off. What do you have that? Do you want to just thank some of
let's
the founding
see,
partners?
See. Okay. I sure will. I'm going to do this from memory. Ooh. And so forgive me if I leave anybody off.
Okay.
Woo. Okay. This is going to go poorly. But I'm trying to say, okay, we've got Ayahuasca Foundation, Heroic Hearts, Fluence, Field Trip. There's so many that were added kind of at the last minute. Veterans Exploring Treatment Solutions, Unlimited Sciences, Maya, Canadian Psychedelic Association, Holos Global. Okay, that's from memory. Forgive me if I'm leaving anybody. If I'm leaving anybody off the list, The Conscious Fund, Hive, Microdose. Okay, I think I've gotten close. There were like 15 or something at
launch.
That
sounds pretty complete. And lots of friends in that group. Ian Michael from Holos has also been on the show.
Yes.
Yeah, as we discussed in the opener, it's a wonderful community of people. And it's like a family that sometimes fights about the same thing passionately, which is needed. I mean, I think that's part of the ethical counterbalances that we have within the community are, you know, fervent fighting that is sometimes a bit too much, but is helping hold everybody in line. And I love that you have this group of people as founding members. I think that as we were talking about this kind of attractor coalition, bringing in more people, and I think as people get more interested in psychedelic medicine, they'll be more interested in the Psychedelic Medicine Association. So well titled as well.
Thank you. I just remembered Illuminate Medicine Institute as well, Dr. Aaliyah and Josh Lilienstein from MAPS. So forgive me that I left them off, but thank you for giving me that opportunity to mention all the partners. If you don't know their work, please check them out. Like, especially, you know, like you said, the veterans organizations are doing amazing work in this space and healing a lot of people. So I really appreciate you having me on and giving me this chance to talk to your family here at the podcast.
Well, and we'll actually have all of those organizations in the show notes. So if Lynn-Marie has left out any at this point, which it sounds like you probably haven't, that seems pretty thorough. Just we'll head over to the show notes for that, and there'll be information about that virtual event if you want to participate in that. Lynn-Marie, this was really fun. It's fun talking to you. I feel like I felt like a little bit like I was like, am I being too like playful and fun? Should I be serious in this medical conversation? But of course not. It's been
okay. Oh, nope. Because remember what the psychedelic said: you do you, Eamon. It's a gift to the world.
Aw, thank you. Yeah, I feel that way. And and I feel that way about everybody. You know, our gift is ourselves. Our gift is our messy struggle. You know, when people are going through psychedelic healing, you know, you find this in like the circles after an ayahuasca ceremony. You know, in many ayahuasca ceremonies, you'll have like a circle where you kind of talk about it. And someone will be talking about how they just had a horrible night and it was just all pain and they puked some stuff out and it was tough. And then they were thinking about this thing. And then later someone will come up to them and be like, oh my God, like, what you said at the end about how you handled that experience has like totally changed my experience. And, you know, that's the thing. Like, we're not, it's not about creating the perfect gift. You know, it's like Leonard Cohen says, forget your perfect offering. There's a crack in everything, and that's what lets the light in. So anyway, I'm not sure why I went on that tangent at the end, but it feels appropriate to our work.
It does, because you being you and me being me is the way we're going to get out this information in the most authentic way possible, I think. You know, like presenting some really faux stoic medical front, because that's what we're talking about. That's going to make for, I don't know, in my opinion, a very boring podcast. So I'm just going to be me and you be you, and hopefully people enjoy what we had to talk about and find it useful.
That's the best advertisement for psychedelics anyway.
Totally. I love
Lynn Marie. Such a treasure. I was going to say pleasure and treat. So treasure. Such a treasure.
That works.
Such a treasure to have you on the Psychedelic Therapy Podcast. Thanks for bringing so much laughter and really, really lit up my day to chat with you. And I'm so excited for you and inspired by what you're creating. So thank you for sharing it.
Thank you so much for having me on. I really, really appreciate it. And likewise, I have thoroughly enjoyed our time.
Thank you for joining us on the Psychedelic Therapy Podcast. If you enjoyed this show, please join the Psychedelic Therapy Facebook group to talk about it. You can also share it with your friends or leave a review on iTunes so more people can discover the show. The Psychedelic Therapy Podcast is presented by Maya, a platform designed to help psychedelic therapists manage and measure client journeys. You can head to mayahealth.com to learn more. The show is for informational purposes only and is not intended to provide mental health or medical advice. Thanks for listening.